Roto-Grinders presents the Daily Fantasy Fix Podcast. Bringing you up-to-the-minute industry news.
Time for me to tell you about the biggest tournament in the history of daily fantasy sports.
Interviews from the biggest names in the industry.
The one and only Kondia. Head Chopper joins us now to talk about this weekend in daily fantasy football. Now on the podcast, Napster Man.
And game analysis to save you time and help you build your bankroll.
Both the salary and the matchup are just too good. If you are not playing him in your head-to-head game, you are just going to lose.
Here is your host, the one and only, Dan Bock.
Hey everybody, what's up? Want to welcome you, Roto Grinders, Daily Fantasy Fix Podcast. We are presented to you by FanDuel. We thank you so much for the listen, the download. You can find us, Stitcher, iTunes. Make sure you subscribe to get access to this very pod day in, day out. Today, very special guest here on the podcast. We're going to talk to one of the gentlemen who is behind the enormous push right now, really unprecedented push of trying to add legal clarity to the fantasy sports world in all 50 states, Jeremy Kudon. He is, again, chief lobbyist there for FanDuel, DraftKings, and the Fantasy Sports Trade Association. So he's going to be with us here in just a moment. So we're going to basically spend the podcast with him. We break down all the important states out there, basically what happened in Indiana and in Virginia. And I think it's just a great conversation to kind of catch you up on what he has to deal with. You know, if you listen to yesterday's show, I kind of ranted and raved about politicians and special interests and, you know, pretty passionate, you know, rant to say the very least. Well, today I got a better, you know, kind of picture in terms of what some of these politicians have to deal with and how things kind of are looking on a local political level and how your voice can be heard as well. So we will talk with him here in just a moment. I know if you're looking for the MLB breakdown for today, my best advice, this is why we have the Morning Grind podcast. We've got Stevie. We've got Hoop. Those guys should be able to help you out from the morning show this morning. So that podcast, it's right here on the podcast stream. And snazzy new intro for those guys. So check them out. They're doing an awesome job on that new podcast. I'm excited to have it. So if you haven't listened to it yet, you're crazy. Because you know what? They do a phenomenal job and great information. They're going to handle the games. I'm going to handle the industry aspect of things here today on this Friday. All right, let's get to it. Again, spoke with him just this morning. And it's for all of you to enjoy. Jeremy Kudon here on the Roto Grinders Daily Fantasy Fix. Okay, excited to bring on our next guest to the podcast. He's somebody who is doing a lot of work behind the scenes for the daily fantasy industry. He is the chief lobbyist for FanDuel, DraftKings, also works alongside the FSTA in terms of trying to get bills passed all across the United States to both legalize and clarify the laws pertaining to fantasy sports. He is Jeremy Kudon of ORIC. Jeremy, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing great, Dan. I really appreciate being on again.
All right, I want to start here with Indiana and Virginia. These are a couple of states I know we've had a little bit of blowback with, especially with the high dollar, $50,000 fee to operate in said state. Really has upset a lot of the small operators, but I want you to take us through a little bit how the legislative process worked here in those two states and how they ended up where they did and how much, you know, power you guys had in the entire process.
I think that I would refer to those as qualified successes for the very reason that you just said, that they did what they accomplished. Both bills accomplished our overall goal, which was legal certainty. Our secondary goal, which was common sense consumer protection guidelines, which, you know, allow people who play the games to feel comfortable that they're playing in a safe environment. But it failed in when it came to the fees and the taxes. I think the difficulty is that many legislators view the world, when it comes to fantasy sports, they still think of FanDuel and DraftKings. In other words, and this is a bit of a tension that we run into, it's not that there aren't concerns about whether a paid season-long contest or whether fantasy football in general is legal or not legal. But there just isn't going to be, there wasn't a reason or a motivation for them to act to pass legislation until last fall with all of the ads and all of the articles and the fallout from attorney generals. So when you speak to legislators, very often, at least especially in the first 3 months, the tenor of the conversation was all about FanDuel and DraftKings, and people thought that those companies were bigger than Apple. They still do think that these two companies are bigger than Apple and have revenues that exceed Microsoft or any of the other Fortune 15 companies that we all know of, McDonald's. We saw that in Connecticut yesterday, for instance. So that is always, that is a hurdle we have to overcome. We certainly hammered the point that this is a huge industry. It's a billion-dollar industry with a lot of small businesses that is important for states, and it just wasn't resonating with the people that, that with the committee chairs and others that were necessary to convince to allow the bill to move forward. I think that some people may have, you know, those bills move so quickly that I think that there are some that might say, oh, this was easy, and you guys just pushed through the bill you wanted. All you have to do is look at the Indiana bill and compare it to the Virginia bill, and you'll see they're two very different bills, and it gives you a sense of how little control we have at the end of the day. I mean, these are the legislators' bills. And so, and they're trying to make sure that they take care of a lot of different interests in the process. So I think that we really did push to get something, a small operator exemption. But at the time, that voice just wasn't being heard, or at least the legislators, the key people in each stage of the process, the committees that we went through, just they viewed it as FanDuel and DraftKings as the problem, and therefore they wanted to make sure that they had fees that would cover the cost of administration. I think that the good news is that as a result of that, that small operator voice is now being heard very loudly. And I think in every committee I'm in or every state that I'm in, we're finding that people know it exists and are immediately saying, yeah, I'll make sure I take care of them. I think you saw that in New York and others. So that was probably a long explanation of explaining just one aspect of it and probably the only negative aspect. The positive aspect is that those bills passed so quickly in what is effectively the first year of this legislative campaign. And that's due to the sponsors really worked very hard. They were invested. They convinced skeptical members, especially committee chairs, that these bills, and I think we talked about that before very briefly, the difficulty of convincing people who have no experience with fantasy sports that this is truly a game of skill, as I like to call it, skill-based entertainment, as opposed to chance-based gaming. Those sponsors, they did a tremendous job getting the bill through the various, getting it through all these different, the gauntlet, if you will, to pass. And I think that the industry owes them. I personally, it's cold comfort right now to small operators who are upset that they can't, at this very moment, operate once those fees become effective in registration. But we were able to overcome the most difficult challenge, which is getting the bill, legal certainty in these bills. Now I think it's going to be a much, much, much easier lift to get a small operator exemption.
Well, it's good to hear that you feel Indiana and Virginia can hopefully be fixed. I know a lot of people are concerned about that. But my question is, what's the solution to this moving forward in terms of being able to subsidize the cost that it takes to regulate and oversee fantasy sports and all these other states moving forward?
I think it should be percentage-based of adjusted net revenue, the difference between prizes paid out or between entry fees and prizes paid out. That's what I think would be the best approach. I recognize the tension here of why states are setting straight dollar figures rather than percentage fees. I'll go back to what I think the solution. I'll tell you the problem just so others can understand it. The difficulty here is we didn't pick the best year to have to do this huge campaign. And I've said many times, this is not a one-year campaign. This is at least a 3 to 4 year campaign. But we had to start it now for obvious reasons because of all the activity in November and since November, as recently as earlier this week with the attorney generals. But the problem with this year is that many states, what they do is they have what you'll have 2 year sessions. So they'll start their session every odd year. and then they'll end it in an even, and it will, the second year will be the even year, which is an election year. And the second year of those sessions is always a short session. And let's be real, they're running for re-election, many of them, and they don't like to take controversial positions. So, for instance, Minnesota has a 10-week session this year, in 2016. That makes it very difficult to pass bills quickly. Coming back to the point, the problem is I could say, hey, I think the best approach is just to do a percentage of based fee. You know, we'll provide you with our revenue numbers and we'll show that you'll make enough money. That takes time. And that was something we definitely heard in Virginia as well, which is that, hey, we need to know that we have at least $100,000 to cover the costs of administrating this new oversight agency, the Department of Agriculture. We need to hire at least one person, and that person's going to have benefits. And that's great that you're going to give us your revenue numbers, but, you know, that's going to take us time to evaluate. It will be much easier if we just have certainty that we're going to have $100,000 from at least two operators, because 50 each, and we know we can fund it, and then we'll be able to pass the bill. So those are the practical issues that you run into.
Now, one thing stood out for me there. You mentioned that lawmakers don't like to take positions on controversial issues, certainly in election years. As I sit here, I wonder, how is fantasy sports considered a controversial issue to pretty much anyone? Like, why is this such a tough issue for certain lawmakers to take a stance on?
So I think that what you're seeing is, and it's a delicate question for me to answer, because the groups that are opposed to it are there are church groups that are opposed to it. There are very conservative groups that are very vocal. And when you think about the state legislatures and how districts are drawn up, having a group oppose you that has resources, that has an organizational structure that allows them to get people out to the polls, can be very disconcerting. As important as this is to all of us, only I think the fact is and the reason we're successful, we've been successful, by the way, is that probably the 20% of people who are really motivated by this issue and would go to the polls still outweighs the 10 to 12% of the people who are really motivated to say that anything that looks or smells or feels like gambling to them should never be allowed. It should be outlawed. I mean, this is America. And we know those views exist. Dan, you and I, who play fantasy sports both daily and season long, this isn't gambling to us. This is just, in my view, this is just, as naive as this may sound, I've never even compared the two. As what I did with my season long or even my daily teams, as close to being like going to a casino or like sports betting. And so, but I think for people who've never played it, who've seen just the advertisements, or even worse yet, have just read the rhetoric out there, they view this as gambling.
Now, I want to start with Maryland. You know, this is a state which I've done a lot of research in, and it frustrates me endlessly because I think it was back in 2012, there was a bill that expressively legalized fantasy sports. Yet here we are, a negative opinion by a attorney general who just happened, by the way, to be the one person to vote against the bill, the one person back in 2012. So my question to you is, where does this stand with Maryland? Because I think I've read that this could be potentially going towards a referendum, and that's something that you and the FSTA are not necessarily excited about. And I'm wondering, like, why is that? Why is a referendum a bad thing, especially when, at least in my somewhat biased opinion, feels like it would be something that would pass fairly easily? Take us through Maryland here.
Well, let's go through a situation. So the bill passed in 2012, and as you said, at that point, FanDuel is fully operational. It is referenced I can't remember who testified. I was not involved at this point in doing this. But it is referenced in the hearings. It's referenced in committee reports. The bill is still passed overwhelmingly. So the notion of daily fantasy sports was every bit as discussed in Maryland in 2012 as it was in Kansas in 2015 when we passed that bill last year. That bill has the same language that we used in Virginia and Indiana for the exemption language, the language that clarifies what fantasy sports is. And that language is derived, of course, from the 2006 federal exemption from the Unlawful Internet Gaming Enforcement Act. So that bill should be the model. It should have, in my view and most others, clearly addresses all forms of fantasy sports. I don't believe in simply, I am someone who believes that when a legislature passes a definition that you don't just say it only applies to exactly what one person was contemplating on the floor. With that said, here, it was clearly contemplated. So it is frustrating. I will say this, I want to be careful here. The Attorney General actually was asked to opine. He did not just opine himself. And his opinion was very, it was about as clear as mud. I mean, he didn't actually say that daily fantasy sports was not contemplated or illegal. He effectively just said, you know, this is a close question, and it's one for the legislature to resolve, whether it is or not. And, you know, that's fine. And the legislature didn't have to do anything. I think that there, I have tremendous respect for the Senate President of Maryland, Mike Miller. I know him. I think the world of him. He spent 40 years trying to get casinos in the state of Maryland. He went through multiple tries. He had referendums. And I think that he, who, by the way, a building is I think the Senate building is named after him. He feels very strongly that fantasy sports got a free, that daily fantasy sports got a free pass, that they didn't have to go through the process that he went through with the casinos. We have worked to try to educate him on this issue and explain why we're not like the casinos. And just candidly, it has not taken. And so we're fighting a very powerful sponsor on this. As to the question of why are we opposed to a referendum, and I'm going to say it, I'll say it, I'm only opposed to a referendum because we already have a law in the books. Like, why should we have to go through this? Why should there be any uncertainty? Why should there be any uncertainty for anyone who participates in daily fantasy sports in Maryland, you know, who plays FanDuel or DraftKings? Why should they have to even worry? It's already been done. They're already legal. There's no reason to take another step at this point. We went through the process that we go through to pass almost 99.9% of the laws in Maryland, and the only types of activities that are subject to referendums are usually gambling activities. I don't think that we're afraid of a referendum, but with that said, it is a presidential election year, and I'm just not sure. Again, we have a lot of people who love daily fantasy sports or fantasy sports in general. I don't know how many of them get out to the polls on you know, for presidential elections. I hope they all get out, and that's going to be a point I do want to hit on, which is that the importance of this community using this issue to start getting active in local politics is, I think, something that we've now seen why local politics are so important. But with that, I'll get back to that later, Dan. I think that the key here is that if a referendum is the solution, we will do everything we can to make sure we pass a bill or that we get the vote out. But with that said, I think that I'm hoping that we'll have a result in Maryland this weekend.
All right, I want to move to New York. This is obviously a very important state for the industry. We saw FanDuel and DraftKings, you know, depart from operations or operating there just a couple of weeks ago. Also heard recently that, you know, the Assemblyman Pretlow felt like it was a better than 50-50 chance that, or a better than even money chance, I should say, that they thought that a bill might pass. So give us the latest. I know a lot of people out there in the Empire State are missing playing daily fantasy, and they want to know when it might be back for them.
You're speaking to one of them right now. You know, you're speaking to me from Midtown Manhattan. And I think I saw a tweet the other day of someone who left Manhattan, you know, landed in Memphis, and said how liberated they felt to be able to finally play fantasy sports again. Yeah, I thought that was great. And I got to say, I was in Minnesota yesterday, and I felt liberated. I think there is nothing like, and I say this in states where they haven't gone through this yet, there is nothing like having something like this ripped away from you to realize how ridiculous and how infuriating it is that it's even taking this much work to get it passed. And I went through that in November with FanDuel, and I feel that way right now, you know, where I can't play daily fantasy sports when I'm at home. And that's frustrating. Because again, this is not something like Napster all those years back where you kind of knew right from the outset that it couldn't, you know, nothing is free, right? So this was frustrating. So let's take it through New York. I think that I fully believe this was the right decision on the company's parts to enter into a settlement like this, because I think that it was important to get to a point with the AG's office where we were no longer slamming each other in the media and, you know, I think to bring down the rhetoric and the whatever feelings of frustration on both sides. Obviously, there were obvious reasons why we were frustrated, but, you know, I think that this was a good thing to do, and I think that it has allowed us to open the door to a real shot at passing legislation. I feel, you know, the lobbyists that we have, the contract lobbyists in New York, are working closely with Assemblyman Pretlow, who's the chair of the Racing and Wagering Committee. He's the individual who had that five-hour hearing in I believe it was early December. So he's been involved in this issue. And together with Senator Bonasek, who's the chair of the Senate Racing and Wagering Committee, who already has introduced legislation, I think that they will work together on a solution. And I really hope to see something done in early May.
Okay, the next state is Illinois. They've got a messy budget situation, and it looked like there was a lot of positive momentum with a bill in that state. But then more recently I read it looked like that might not necessarily be working. So take us through Illinois, another really important state for this industry.
So Illinois, I mean, that state had – so New York and Illinois are funny because I don't want to say they're anomalies from the rest of the country. Together with California, another our biggest state, arguably, I think that with Illinois, you know, they've been engaged in this incredible war with the governor. The legislature and the governor are battling over a budget, so it's very difficult to find any air in Springfield to deal with anything other than the important issues revolving around the budget. I mean, right now, I don't think they have enough money to pay out their lottery tickets, you know, their lottery winnings, because they just don't have an agreed upon budget. And that's gone on. We're now on year two of that. So that is the reason that I think that bill has sort of stalled, was that the legislature really wasn't meeting that often. They had primary contests they were worried about. And when they did meet, many of the issues were trying to work at the margins to ensure that there was funding for school programs and for early child care and things that really are as important as this is, truly like life and death important. The good news is I believe, and I think that Representative Zelensky said this on a conference that he was on a panel with Assemblyman Pretlow, coincidentally enough, that there will be a major amendment to his bill that should be coming out next week. I think that you're going to see some really things are going to start moving in Illinois, I believe, in the next couple of weeks. You know, unlike other states, and this is a little frustrating for us, we have opposition from some casinos and from some horse tracks, you know, and that is in contrast to states like Missouri, Indiana, Mississippi, where we've been working hand in hand with those interests. So we are trying to overcome a pretty fierce lobbying campaign. So there's a difference between a campaign from some church groups, which is still, as we said earlier, you know, that even that can kill you. But when you're going against some really powerful opponents, that's tougher. And so we're trying to get to a place where they're going to be okay with the legislation. But again, I feel like you're going to see a lot of momentum.
Okay, I know we mentioned this earlier on Texas. They're not going to be in session until 2017, but there's no question that this is an extremely important state in the grand scheme of things. Now, there's nothing you can do really right now, but do you guys already putting boots on the ground, planting seeds, and working towards being able to get a bill passed fairly quickly there when session opens in 2017? And take us through the Lone Star State.
So we already have, we do have lobbyists. We have outstanding lobbyists in Texas. So we have the boots on the ground. That is certainly, once these sessions end in July, you know, by July 1st, almost 90% of the legislatures will be done that are currently in session. All of our focus will be on, you know, when I say all, most of our focus will be on solving Texas. I should say the key to Texas is passing 8 to 10 bills, you know, this year. 6 to 8 would be good, 8 to 10 would be better. The more states that do this, the more likely it is that a state like Texas, which is very, historically has been very opposed to anything that even smells, there's a hint of a smell of gaming, they refuse to even take it up. If we can get 8 to 10 states to pass laws that say that this is legal, that this is not a form of gaming, I think our chances of being able to move something in Texas will go up significantly. I think it's going to be absolutely essential. Anyone who's listening who lives in Texas starts reaching out and telling legislators, this is something in November that will inform my camp, you know, how I vote. You know, your commitment to doing a fantasy sports bill will be something that informs my how I do something here or who I vote for. And that really should be, you know, the more people we can get in Texas to say that to their to the people running for office, the better chance we have. But again, I think it's really two factors, Dan, our success right now and getting the vote out. And that, by the way, you know, when we return to Virginia and Indiana, and again, I'm going to get hammered, I'm sure, on Twitter today for this, or tomorrow, or whenever we people hear this, I will be hammered for this. But the fact is, that's why Indiana and Virginia are so important.
Now, somebody who lives in Florida, I know that this whole situation is a little bit messed up here. You've got a Seminole PAC to deal with. But it looked like Florida was in an amazing position. You guys had some of the very best sponsors of a bill. Everything was cruising right along. And then suddenly, you know, kind of ended with no resolution whatsoever and kind of died out. So what happened along the way in Florida, and kind of take us through that situation and why it appeared to be, you know, moving in the right direction and basically didn't finish.
You know, when you have, you know how everybody last year thought the Nationals would break, would win 126 games? That's sort of how I feel about Florida. Now we did better, I think, than the Nationals did last year. And I'm a Yankees fan. Every year is like that for us. But I you know, we had a dream team, we had dream sponsors, and I think we were we ended up getting wrapped into that Seminole Gaming Compact, which they were going to try to revise or enter a new compact. That compact expired. We just couldn't get we could not circumvent that problem, that mess. You know, I think that there are a number of people in leadership also who are like the states I mentioned before. Anything that smells or sniffs like is even has a scent of gaming, they are opposed to. Keep in mind, you can't right now in many parts of Florida get an Uber for the same reason that there's just you run into the political process. So even with the best sponsors, the best lobbyists, the best message, I think if both legislatures or both chambers were just asked to take a straight-up vote on our bill, we would have passed. But we got caught up in politics, and there is a chance, a glimmer, that if the Florida Supreme Court rules that all it's the big gaming case they have in June, if they rule on that and they rule in a way that means that every municipality can have gaming, I think you will see Governor Scott call for a special session, and I think we would be part of that special session. Otherwise, we are looking just like Texas at a 2017 play.
Okay, I want to take a quick overarching look at, you know, what you're doing right now, and very simply, is this ever happened before? I mean, have we ever seen an industry put forth this much legislation throughout an entire country? Because it's mind-boggling to me to see us have 30-some-odd bills on the books right now, or not on the books, but, you know, being discussed right now. And I'm just wondering, you know, in the history of lawmaking, you could say, is this somewhat unprecedented, what we're seeing and what you're trying to accomplish?
I think that Uber is probably the closest example, although there were some differences there in that Uber is really – what Uber was trying to do was – avoid and still is trying to do is avoid having every locality decide what they could or could not do, whether they could operate. And so they were going to the states to try to get a uniform approach. It wasn't life or death for them. For us, this is the states are where we have to go. So it is unprecedented, I think, to say that an industry is doing what we're doing just simply to make sure that they can operate in all of these states. So this is somewhat, this is unprecedented in terms of scope, volume, and the I think the speed in which we were able to launch what we launched in terms of having bills in 30 states and within 6 months of the problem, we had bills in 30 states up, and many of them moving through committees and making tremendous progress. It's probably taken years off of my life, but it's been a lot of fun. And I think what, as we were talking about earlier, what's so important is that the people listening to this and their friends and family and others who are interested in fantasy sports use this moment as the moment to say, you know what, I actually want to get engaged in my state politics.
Okay, final thought here. Just what's the best way for people to make an impact? Is it simply, you know, going to fantasyforall.com? Are they better off, you know, visiting their local legislator? Is it phone calls? You know, you are in touch with all these people who make these decisions, all these politicians. What strikes home with them the most? How can we be effective?
The best possible way is to call your legislator or to try to visit them in their make an appointment to visit them in their district office, which is often 5 minutes away from where you live, you know, from where everybody lives, or just get on the, pick up the phone. It's so much better when they just get a call unprompted, not with a message, but like, hey, this is really important to me. I live in this place. You know, and I've said this for other companies before, everyone always talks about political contributions and lobbyists and all these things. None of that is as important as constituents. I mean, that's how people get elected, is constituents. And to hear one call for most legislators is the equivalent in their mind of, wow, 100 people in my district care about this. So you can imagine, or 1,000, you know, they multiply. They just don't get that many calls. So having a real conversation with them, or even if you have the time, sitting down with them and saying, this is really important. That, you know, when they meet with me or with a lobbyist, they know that this is what we're paid to do. They meet with you, they know you actually really care about this. This is your livelihood. Or this is something that just, you know, this is your form of entertainment or escape. And so that's what I really encourage people to do, is pick up the phone or just drive to their district office. You don't have to drive to the state capitol.
Well, Jeremy, I know you're super busy, and greatly appreciate you jumping on with us, kind of keeping us up to speed on exactly what's going on. And continued luck, as obviously you got a lot of work left to do, but we're very appreciative of the job you have done, continue to do, and thanks again for jumping on the podcast.
Thank you so much.
All right, it's the time of the show where I tell you about our friends at T-Mobile. Yes, I've been talking about it all week long. You're running out of time. You only got two more days, and that's to get the free MLB.TV subscription on your T-Mobile phone. You're right, free. That's $110 value for you. You will not miss a game all season long. And you're listening to this podcast. You play Daily Fantasy. It's a lot more fun when you can watch the games and you know, sweat the games. And if you got your phone with you, hey, it's a no-brainer. And to make things even better for you is they've got this service called Binge On, which basically means you can watch all these games on the MLB.TV premium subscription and not use an ounce. That's right, no data. Because data, you know what? If I watch it on my phone typically, it's going to eat up a ton, but not at T-Mobile. So you should certainly check this out. They've got you covered. Again, very simple. If you're a new customer, all you have to do is go to tmobile.com/MLB and you can enroll in this. Again, it's absolutely free. It doesn't cost you anything. And if you're not a T-Mobile customer, now's a great time to change over so you don't miss a single game, a single inning. Now, if you can watch all 7,000 hours of baseball, then you might want to, you know, kind of maybe get a life. 7,000 is a lot, but if you want to watch 1,000 or two, I get it. So check them out over there at T-Mobile. They're doing a great job with this promotion, and it ends on April the 10th. So you can catch any out-of-market game all season long. Again, T-Mobile.com/MLB. Sign up for MLB.TV while on our network. New MLB.TV premium subscribers only. Blackout restrictions do apply. Visit MLB.TV for details. Binge On available to T-Mobile customers with qualifying plan. Detectable video typically streams at DVD quality, and video from participating services doesn't count against full speed data on the U.S. network. Third-party subscriptions charges may apply. All right, that does it for the podcast today. Thanks again to Jeremy Kudon for jumping on with us and catching us up on what's going on the legal landscape with fantasy sports. We'll be back on Monday, of course. Again, the first week is a bit messy with lots of day games and opening days and whatnot, but now things are going to level off just a little bit, so it'll get back into more of a normal groove here starting next week with our game analysis. So we'll head back there next week. We'll obviously keep you up to date on any news pertaining to the daily fantasy industry, as we always do. And be sure to check out our sponsor, FanDuel.com, if you haven't done so already. Till Monday, have yourself a great Friday, a great weekend, and we will see you.
Thanks for listening to the Roto-Grinders Daily Fantasy Fix Podcast. Don't miss an episode by subscribing to it on iTunes and Stitcher. And for up-to-the-minute DFS news, please follow us on Twitter at Roto-Grinders.